Good morning. Welcome to the Message of Truth. My name is Keith Greer. I want to thank you for listening to our radio broadcast this morning and hope you'll become a regular listener each Sunday morning as we endeavor to give you the message of truth. We would also like to invite you to watch our TV program that begins right after this radio broadcast at 8 o'clock on Channel 6 of your public access station entitled Searching the Scriptures. Please give it a look. We hope you'll become a regular viewer of that program too. We would also like to encourage you to check out our website, churchofchristinharrisburg.com. You will find many valuable resources that will aid you in your study of God's book. We also have all of our radio broadcast and our TV program can be viewed from that website too. We would also like to remind you at the end of this broadcast, you'll be given the meeting times of our services at Harrisburg, and we want to invite you to come and worship and study God's Word with us. You will always be warmly received. We began last month by looking at an overview of the Bible to give you a brief description of the different books that are contained in the Bible. We are now in the Minor Prophets, and this morning we're going to look at the Minor Prophet Amos. Amos is often referred to as the burden bearer who declared the doom of Israel. The book of Amos is 9 chapters and 146 verses long. You receive this name from the author of the book. Amos prophesies during a period of natural optimism in Israel. Business is good, the boundaries are bulging, yet all is not what it appears to be. His name means burden, burden bearer, a place a burden upon. The name was lived up to by this prophet. For God placed upon him the burden of declaring his divine will of truth to apostate Israel and to the surrounding nations, which God would judge. As might be expected, his message was not received very warmly. One of the prophets of Bethel told him to go home, in essence, "Don't call us, we'll call you," in Amos chapter 7, verse 10 through 13. He was from Tekoka, a town of Judah, in the southern kingdom, according to chapter 7 and verse 2, located 6 miles south of Bethlehem and 12 miles south of Jerusalem. Its surrounding terrain was rugged and uninviting, built initially for defensive purposes, according to 2 Chronicles 11, verse 5 through 10. Before being called as a prophet for God, Amos was a herdsman and tender of sycamore trees, according to chapter 7, 14 and 15. This peculiar word herdsman indicates that he was a herdsman of a particular small and rugged type of sheep called Negev, whose wool was superior in quality. Sycamore trees were fruit described as fig-like, slightly sweet and watery, somewhat woody in nature, eaten by the poorest of the population. Thus, Amos was an outdoorsman used to working. He would have little sympathy for the luxurious and prosperous life that he would find in his brethren in the northern kingdom. From this simple background, this prophet would be humble in spirit. Never trained or served as a prophet, according to chapter 7 and verse 14, he was unwilling to be classed as a member of the guilds who made their living by bowing to the wishes of the people and preaching a pleasing message that would guarantee a return engagement. Characterization. Amos might be called the first great reformer. He was not of the school of the prophets, who by this time were disposed to cry what the people wanted, but he was chosen by God, not them, according to chapter 7, 14 and 15. There was not the sympathy, the love, and the feeling of a statesman or a citizen, but a cold sense of justice and right. His very attitude breathed the air of his life in his rugged environment. He was a stern prophet of justice and of righteousness that was needed at this time. The date of this book, in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, son of Joash, king of Israel, 2 years before the great earthquake in chapter 1 and verse 1, must have been severe, as it was mentioned also by Zechariah 200 years later, in Zechariah 14:15. Uzziah and Azariah, 2 Kings 14, verse 21, and the kings of Judah, 52 years in Jerusalem. For the most part, he was a good king. Around 787 to 735 B.C., Jeroboam II became king of Samaria and reigned 41 years, 2 Kings 11, verse 23. 790 to 749 BC, likely. Most believe that the book was written around 755 BC. These two aggressive kings carried their small kingdom along in the same stride from victory to victory. The old limits of the kingdom built by David and Solomon was reached. It was a period of expansion, freedom, activity, prosperity, and peace. Money poured in, and the armies were always victorious. The people were filled with pride in their armies and in their accomplishment. No one had anxiety or fear of invasion from any source. This was a golden age of the north of the Israel kingdom, the high mark of their national prosperity. Jeroboam II was then on the throne, and he was a strong king. He ruled over a large extent of territory, as Jonah had predicted he would in 2 Kings chapter 14, verse number 25. But unfortunately, there was much wealth in the nation. There was little wisdom with that wealth. Feasting and banquets took the place of religious endeavors. A spirit of greed ruled the society. Corruption of justice became a common sin. Might became right. Land seizure became an everyday crime. The landlords had all the legal machinery at their command to oppress the poor. The result, the rich became richer and the poor became poorer. Men lived at ease in Zion, according to chapter 6 and verse 1. The love of luxury prevailed everywhere. Religion lost all of its vitality, and morals were completely ignored. Insincerity and dishonesty, corruption, criminal extravagance, and blind assurance took such a firm hold of the wealthy, arrogant, voluptuous, and they became heathen in everything but their name. The mission? God wanted the northern kingdom to have a strong word of warning. Bethel was a small town 10 miles north of Jerusalem. It was the seat of the chief national sanctuary where Jeroboam II had worshipped. God directed the prophet to the spot where the forces were leading his people away from the true worship to him. Amos was sent into a people who felt no need for his preaching. God had given them the land, blessed them greatly. What had they done in return? Instead of worshiping and adoration and practicing righteousness and love one for another, direction had not been followed. Cruel, selfish, and rebellious is what they were. Since he was their God, they knew he loved them. They would offer extravagant worship, and offering and worship God would gladly accept. It was time for God to teach them a better lesson, and a bitter lesson. Israel, the chosen of God, riding the crest of prosperity, basking in confidence due to the military strength and accomplishment, doubtedly feared, felt assured of divine favor. Israel would fall, not because of lack of strength on God's part, because she had went headlong into the depths of her sin. Her proverbial cup of iniquity was now overflowing. God had, because of his infinite wisdom and indignation, must act swiftly. Yet before that, they must be divinely warned. A courageous plan, plain-spoken prophet would make the message clear, firm, and easy for them to understand, holding nothing back, a message of doom. For if she failed to return, Amos was a man with that message and with that truth. The teaching was quite simple. Sin is a reproach to a nation, and unrighteousness must be dealt with. Two lessons must be taught: the true nature and character of God, and the relationship of God with the nations, and especially to his people Israel. Who is really in charge? We know who is in charge. God is in charge. A brief outline of this book would follow. Chapters 1 and 2 are an introduction, judgment against the nation for their crimes. Chapters 3 and 6, three messages against the crimes of Israel, the nation of God. And chapter 7 through chapter 9, verse 10, five visions indicating God's determination to bring punishment upon unfaithful Israel. In chapter 9, 11 through 15, the promise of a bright future, the messianic hope. No, each began with these words, "Thus saith the Lord," identified as the source of the judgment. Three transgressions, and for four, not to be taken literally, signifies a full and complete number. Their cup of iniquity was full, now mingled with the cup of God's wrath. Each crime and condemnation of Israel began with, "Hear this word," chapter 3, chapter 4, and chapter 5. Judgments against the surrounding nations and Israel are contained in Amos. Damascus, greatly cruel during times of war, Amos chapter 1, verse 3 through 5. Gaza, for making slaves of the captive, in Amos chapter 1, verses 6 through 8. Tyre, for slave trafficking, and not remembering the covenant of brotherhood, in chapter 1, 9 and 10. Edom, for pursuing his brother with the sword, chapter 1, verse 11 and 12. Ammon, for her senseless cruelty, in Amos chapter 1, verse 13 through 15. Moab, for burning the bones of the dead and turning them to lime, in Amos chapter 2, verse 1 through 3. Upon Judah, in Amos 2, 4 and 5. Religious apostasy was in her sin, went after false religious teaching, forgetting the law and the commandments, acted like the heathen nations would be treated as such. Upon Israel itself, Amos chapter 2, verse 6, 6 through 14. The main burden of the prophecy begins here. Injustice, greed, immorality, idolatry, and apostasy. Amos 2, 6 through 8, and verse 12. Living in luxury while oppressing the poor. Amos 3, 15 through chapter 4, and verse 1. Affecting just and taking bribes. Amos 5, verse 12. Indifference, indulgent, and insensitive. Amos 6, 1 through 6. Ignoring the divine warnings of God. Chapters 4, 6 through 12. Five visions and their significance. The vision of the locust, the vision of fire, the vision of the plumb line, and the vision of the summer fruit indicates ripeness, and destruction was near. And the vision of the Lord standing by the altar in chapter 9, 1 through 10. The kingdom would not be delivered. Sinful kingdom will be destroyed. Yet there was hope for the future, according to Amos 9, 11 through 15, the tabernacle of David. Now, what practical lessons can one learn from the prophet Amos? Number one, lessons about the person of God. He is a person, a divine being, implied by the pronoun I that's used over and over in this book. He is omnipotent. He is omnipresent. He is a God of wrath. And he is a God who offers a way of escape to those who will take it. Amos chapter 9. Verse 11 and 12. A nation reaps what they sow. Remember the introductory statement to the eight nations. Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions, and for four I will turn punishment. The hope of the nation does not lie in her great wealth, her physical power, her rich resources, but the character of her people. America, we need to be listening. God holds his people accountable to the law in which they live. The six surrounding heathen nations were punished for their sin and injustice. So will God's people when they become unfaithful. God and man cannot walk together unless man agrees with God, according to Amos chapter 3, verse 2 and 3. Greater blessings mean greater responsibility, according to Amos 3, 1 and 2. And the prevailing sins of Israel in the days of Amos are the prevailing sins of our society. Greed, lust, luxury, and forgetting of God. And number seven, God is a God who hears the prayers of the faithful, according to Amos chapter 7. And last, it is possible for God to reach the end of his patience and to pronounce doom. This nation would suffer because of its sin and because of its ignoring the warning that God gave them. Yes, Amos was the burden bearer, the declarer of the doom of Israel. And sadly, they failed to heed his warning. And thus they will be destroyed, and they will be accountable for their actions, and God will punish them like he will any nation who forgets him and goes in to spiritual adultery. Thank you for listening. Tune in again next Lord's Day. Have a wonderful day.